reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome on this latest edition of In the Gravel Trap. We're coming to you this on a very selective, very special weekend as IndyCar hits Barber Motorsports Park. I am your host, Joey Barnes. Joined with me is Josh Farmer. Josh, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Joey. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right, man. There's a lot of racing going on. Racing and hockey, so it's a pretty good day for me on that end. Well, I guess we'll just dive right on into it. We're getting ready to give y'all for the next hour a nice rundown on qualifying as well as talking a little bit about what to expect with tomorrow's race out there in Alabama. As well as the Mazda Road to Indy is out there, and it was a very, I guess for lack of a better word, it was a very eventful slash uneventful Indy Lights race. But at the same time, there's some news going on with Sam Schmidt and his team, Schmidt-Peterson Motorsport, and Connor Daly as they prepare for what is looking like the 99th Indy 500. So,
yeah. Excellent news for Connor. I know they probably had a goal to try and run, the whole season with Connor, but financial reasons they weren't able to do that. But you know, it's really good for Connor to be able to get another shot. He hasn't raced in an oval in 2 years. In fact, it was Indy, but I think Connor's up to the challenge. He ran smooth and steady, and he did as well as the car would give him at Long Beach last weekend, and finishing 17th. And sometimes that's all it takes. So how do you think Connor will do?
I think he's going to do great, honestly. But I love the fact that he's getting an opportunity. We'll get a chance to climb in on that here in a bit. First, let's touch a little bit on qualifying. I know that's the big thing that is very wet out there in Barber Motorsports Park, and there was a very fun qualifying session, very interesting qualifying session. And ultimately, after everything was said and done, they ended up having to cut it. I believe they called it 5 minutes short because of the weather, but it turned out to be like a minute and a half short. And Elio Castroneves ended up securing the pole, as well as teammate Will Power starting alongside him on the front row, and then his other teammate Simon Pagenaud is going to clean up in third. And then finally we get a change up. We got Scott Dixon fourth, and then finally Joseph Newgarden, some fresh blood in there, hanging out there in the top five, so he's going to start fifth. There's, Juan Montoya is starting 15th. And, it's interesting that he's that far off of his Penske teammates. It's also very interesting when you look down, I believe the first Honda is Graham Rahal in eighth. And the next closest Honda to him is James Hinchcliffe in tenth. What do you make of qualifying, and what was the biggest surprise that stood out to you?
Well, I guess really to me, on the note on Honda, Graham Rahal's eighth, but if you look at the timesheet, he logged the third quickest time of the, it wasn't the third, it was the fourth quickest time of the day. So had he made the fast six, he would have qualified fourth. And, this is the first natural terrain road course that we've seen with the Aero Kits, but still, that being said, Chevy still has the upper hand. So, and then with the last session, it was, with the rains coming, it was just, and nobody having a fresh set of sticker reds, it came down to who was going to go out first. And Elio just happened to be in the best pit spot and let him out, ran a quick lap and was able to get the pole, and Will Power had nothing for him.
Ultimately, I think it's interesting because this is supposed to be the Honda Indy Grand Prix of Alabama, and last year obviously these cars were, for lack of a better word, about as spec can be for this series last year. And Ryan Hunter-Reay ended up taking home the victory with Marco Andretti finishing second, and I believe Scott Dixon, if my memory serves me right, was third to clean up on the podium. But, you know, I find it really interesting that they're struggling that much, that Honda is struggling that much, but not just Honda. I mean, you look at the resources that they have. I know that the conference call earlier in the week, Ryan Hunter-Reay said that they kind of got a little bit of a late start. But, I mean, what is this, fourth race of the season? So,
fourth.
Not that I expect updates by the fourth race, but I would have expected some strides to be made and some gains to be made because, I mean, last week at Long Beach, Marco Andretti finished eighth, and he was the highest placed Honda. And we're talking about qualifying, and the highest Hondas in qualifying is Graham Rahal, also an eight. So it's just, I'm a little infuriated by the fact that when you look at a team like Andretti Autosport, who is largely considered one of the big three, and I love Andretti Autosport, I have a hard time calling them one of the big three because the last couple years they get beat on points. They may have more wins than Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports, but ultimately they're losing out on what was two cars. Two cars, I put that lightly. You know, Pagino finishing third or fourth in points the last couple years, and then Andretti Autosport not being able to put a guy ahead of him in the points. I think Schmidt-Peterson is your leading Honda team at this moment. And obviously, they've already shown that this year because Hinch ended up winning at NOLA in that rain-filled wreck fest that was out there. But, it's almost as if when you go to Barber and the thing is named Honda Indy Grand Prix of Alabama, it's almost like going up to Michigan in NASCAR and being a Toyota team and winning up there. It really pisses off a lot of people, and I got to think that if Chevy pulls off a victory tomorrow, that's going to piss off Honda pretty badly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know about that, but I will say this: that at a media availability at the Honda Hospitality event last week at Long Beach, Steve Erickson of HPD said that Honda's main goal this year was. Or he said something to the effect that their goal and their biggest goal was to win the Indy 500, and then everything else will take care of itself after that. I think that's. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. That's essentially what he said. So that being said, you know, we still have the oval aero kit we've seen a little bit of a video of Honda's aero kit at Fontana, but we haven't seen Chevy's aero kit yet. We don't know what the lap times are and. I think, you know, and my memory serves me correctly, Scott Dixon said he hasn't even seen the full Chevy aero kit built up yet, next week when we have the open test, that's when we'll finally see it and we'll get some times. We'll see how fast the car actually is, and we'll see if Honda is still further behind.
That is something that Ryan Hunter-Reay did make note of, is the fact that, you know, they may be struggling on the road courses and the street circuits with this package, and they may be a little bit behind then, but who's to say that they are not the absolute beast of a team whenever they go and touch ovals and become that dominant force? I mean, we very well could be seeing Chevy dominate on road courses and Honda dominate on ovals. And even though Indy pays 100 points, to win, which is a huge chunk of the season, you got to think at the end of the day that you've really got to have a road course package to have a shot at this championship. So, Josh, I watched qualifying and I was actually kind of miffed. And
why?
I'll tell you why I'm miffed, man. You know, Rodolfo Gonzalez comes in, replaces Carlos Fuertes this weekend. Last week we saw it was Connor Daly. Rodolfo did a decent job. I mean, for never stepping foot in that car prior to the – well, I take that back. He was in there for testing, if I do recall, or had tested the car. But – and I don't know if that was with Dale Coyne or with another team. But, he goes in and he still runs a competitive time. He's moderately – I mean, obviously 21st is nothing to write home about, but this field is relatively close together from first – down to 22nd. It's the guy in 23rd that worries me, and it's a guy that's worried me all season from the second that the season's taken off. There is no pace in Francisco Dracone or Francesco Dracone, however the hell you pronounce the name. You know, I don't know, man. I mean, he's 3 seconds off of the leader in qualifying. He's almost 2 full seconds. He's 1.8 seconds back from Carlos Munoz, who qualified 22nd. 1.8 seconds back from the next dead last person on the grid. What in the hell do you make of this? I mean, this can't be Dale Coyne, because last week Connor Daly finished 17th and ended up lapping him, and Connor Daly didn't even have his own seat for that car. He was replacing Rocky Morin Jr., who was replacing Carlos Huertas. So, I mean, what do you make of this situation?
Well, I mean, it ultimately comes down to a couple things. I mean, number one, you know, Dale Coyne has always he's done whatever it's taken just to be on the racetrack. I mean, I guess a good analogy. As much as I like Dale, I would say he's kind of, I mean, the team has gotten better over the years, but since losing Justin Wilson, he's pretty much had to revert back to his pre-merger state. I would say before the merger in 2008. But which kind of brings up the point about pay drivers. I mean, this isn't limited to Dale or Dracone or whatever, you know. But it's pay driving essentially, to quote our good friend Brian Carosio of Auto Racing One, it's a disease that's killing open wheel racing worldwide. And part of it with IndyCar, it's a little bit self inflicted because of the Leader Circle program. And you know, in IndyCar, there's no purse money. It's pretty much just as long as you run the whole season, you get around $1.2 million. Not sure the exact amount. Which, I mean, that ensures full fields for promoters. But the backside of that is that it doesn't give teams the incentives to go out and hire the best drivers, like a Connor Daly or a Jared Hildebrand, or even to an extent before last week, a Sage Karam. You know, it gives teams pretty much the incentive to hire drivers to keep the shop doors open. I'm going to use Schmidt-Peterson Motorsport as an example here. They have James Hinchcliffe in the number one car. And they tested Daly at Sebring, but then they went ahead and went with James Jakes, who's likely bringing money to the table. So essentially, and you know, a guy like Sam Schmidt is trying to make a living in racing. You know, he's not like Roger Penske or Chip Ganassi that independently wealthy. I mean, Schmidt is racing and trying to keep shop doors open. So hiring a driver like James Jakes, who can get, I mean, James Jakes can proficiently get a car into the leader circle for the next year, which Mikhail Elotion was able to do very, very well. It surprised a lot of people last year, but I mean, me and Brian were sitting here talking about Elotion last year. So from that standpoint, I would say, pay driving is part of that, but as far as Dracone's pace, the guy was very slow in his first stint driving for Conquest, and he was he was nowhere seen competitive, and then he's not competitive now. I mean he hasn't done anything that's really warranted anything dangerous. I've seen drivers do a lot worse things. I've seen Shigeaki Ohtori drive 130 miles an hour down pit road at Long Beach, and that's downright dangerous. And I saw Milka Duno at Chicago drive up and nearly in front of the field and almost caused the big one. I mean, Dracone's not slated to drive on an oval, so maybe we don't have to worry about that. But still, when you're consistently that slow off the pace, I don't know why IndyCar hasn't taken a look at that, to be honest with you.
Well, I look at this, And I disagree on the unsafe point, because today Ryan Hunter-Reay was on a flying lap in qualifying, and in all honesty, the guy ended up missing out on potentially being in the fast six, totally had to dump his hot lap run because Dracone slower traffic in front of him. You know, at what point does being off the pace by such a wide margin become unsafe? Because we're talking about Barber's a very fast, elevated road course. And, you know, just because the guy's, what is he, Italian or something?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Name like Tony. But just because you're Italian doesn't make you fast. I'm sorry. At the end of the day, you need to put up the results. And Dale Coyne, I think, put the wrong guy in the seat. I've said that since the beginning of the season. And you just referenced his conquest days. Here are your stats, Mr. Josh Farmer. At conquest, his highest finish was 20th. And this season, he's achieved two finishes of 23rd and a finish at Long Beach of 21st. So he still hasn't even come close to his best finish, in 4 or 5 years now. And not to mention, in his Auto GP days, he didn't exactly light the world on fire there either. He finished a career best 6th twice in his final season last year in 2014. Other than that, this guy's finishing 11th and 14th and 12th. There's not really that many cars in Auto GP, folks. So, yeah, you know, when you got slow drivers out there like the Milka Dunos and the Francesco Dracones, things aren't going to be great. I mean, yes, to your point, thank goodness this guy's not on an oval, because that could really hurt somebody. But road courses are incredibly fast, and when you got a place like this, I mean, especially, I mean, you look at NOLA, you got three professionals. You got Sebastian Bourdais, Ryan Hunter-Reay, and Simon Pagenaud running side by side, and Pagenaud trying to take it, in my opinion, three wide. I know some people disagree and think it was Hunter-Reay's fault, but you've got a situation there where three competitors at pace running together, they end up getting collected, and we saw a car get airborne and almost chip the open cockpit of Sebastian Bourdais, which could have been very, very bad. And number one, they shouldn't have been racing that day on that track, in my opinion, anyway. But, you know, it's already dangerous enough when you got guys that know what they're doing that go for it. Could you imagine if those three drivers had to actually work their way through traffic with guys that are a second and a half or 3 seconds off the pace like Francesco Dracone? I know I'm beating a dead horse here, but flat out, I think the right guys, I understand that money is what's very vital for every race team, but I'll say it for a long time. If you find the drivers with the talent, you will find the sponsorship to put them in the car. And where I go along with this is Connor Daly. We just touched on him a little bit earlier in the show. This kid, 23 years old, hell of a talent. His father's Derek Daly, F1 star, IndyCar star. And this kid's been running through the ranks in Indy Lights and GP2 and GP3 with an F1 hopeful. Ultimately is now kind of centered up, stayed grounded and focused on IndyCar. He's got one Indy 500 start with AJ Foyt Racing in 2013. He ended up doing pretty decent at Long Beach, ran up the pace, and he gets a chance now at Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports next month to prove his worth. And the way that deal came together is he's going to be running the number 43 for Schmidt-Peterson in a third entry, and this is going to be a second attempt at that race. And ultimately, you've got his third career start. Everything came together with his dad and Richard Petty to try to make this thing happen. And they haven't released the sponsorship. We know the car is going to be red, white, and blue. I'm really excited about this. And I think that being in that car, Schmidt-Peterson is a very competitive car. And I think he has a really good chance to get down there and get a top 10 finish in the 99th running of the Indianapolis 500. Josh, what are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, I think Connor's got a good shot. He'll probably have to take a refresher test to get back up to speed I think, because he hasn't run there in a couple of years. But you know, I mean, Connor is something that IndyCar could potentially capitalize on as far as like, you know, young Americans, like, you know, like I've already mentioned, you know, Karam, Newgarden, you know, and even Andy Weiss, you know, someone like Spencer Pigot, you know, they're people that the American public can relate to. I mean, Connor grew up, you know, 5 miles or less from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, you know, and Connor, Connor essentially, you know, like I said last week, you know, I mean, he's 13 going on 30. I mean, he's very young, but he's very mature. And, you know, another advantage that I think Connor could probably have as far as racing on road courses is, you know, I mean, he's raced in GP2 and GP3 where qualifying is much more cutthroat there than it is over here. I mean, if you look through the stats, you know, drivers that have come up through the Mazda Road to Indy, like Newgarden, you know, or Tristan Vautier even, you know, nobody from the Mazda Road to Indy, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think anybody from the Mazda Road to Indy has won a pole in the last few years. I mean, Newgarden, you know, struggled tremendously in qualifying in his first 2 years in IndyCar, and he's finally become a good qualifier. You know, last year qualified second place a bunch of times, and now this year he's made the fast six 2 weeks in a row. So yeah, I think Connor's got several advantages ahead of him, you know, and you know then having Hinchcliffe as a teammate, and you know, and he told me that Paul Tracy was giving him a little bit of advice to the Long Beach. So I mean, I think Connor potentially has all the makings of a very successful effort.
And it's just another element there where comparing Connor Daly to Dracone, you get a guy that's got the talent, they found the sponsor, and they put him in the car. And I just think that's something not every team can afford 2 entries, not every team can afford 3 entries, but if you find the talent, I always believe you will find the sponsorship. And at the end of the day, you know, you've got to put the most talented drivers in the seat because that's what's going to bring the best fans out. That's what you can market the best. I mean, Josh, just for the hell of it, how in the hell can you market Francesco Dracone right now as an IndyCar driver to the fans? What appeal is there?
Yeah, I mean he's, you know, I'm not sure where exactly his funding comes from. I mean, I think he is a, I mean, this is just through my research. I think he is a pilot for, I mean, he had a sponsor on his car and driving for Conquest. It was some kind of airline or something in Italy where I think he works as a pilot. So here he is. He's bringing money from the company just because he's got connections, kind of like Mil Guidino had connections through Cisco, and Hiro Matsushita had connections through Panasonic because it's family owned company. I mean, but then again, you know, he's driving for Dale Coyne. He's not driving for Roger Penske or anything like that. So go ahead.
But I don't disagree with any of that assessment. But here's the better point is, obviously, somebody like Connor Daly's and even Alexander Rossi over there in GP2, you know, other Americans are going to be appealing to us because obviously we want American drivers to do very well. Look at somebody like Luca Filippi. If you compare the two, how do you mark Luca Filippi compared to Francesco Dracone? What appeal can you give me to differentiate the two drivers on why I should watch IndyCar? Like, what about those? What about Luca Filippi is so compelling compared to Dracone?
Well, compared to Dracone, you know, Filippi is extremely talented, and he just, you know, but as far as like getting the American public excited, I mean, someone like Filippi is going to have to start winning and set the world on fire, and you know, I mean, I'm not sure how good he is in front of the camera, because he's never really had that opportunity yet.
Oh, true. Headaches. Whatever. I don't know if I want to be mad at Dale Coyne for putting him in the seat or IndyCar for licensing that kid, but I think Dracone just... I believe it's only a 4-race deal. Hopefully after this race, he's completely done for the rest of the year, because I just... Some people, and I hate saying it because everybody deserves to try to pursue their dream. And I don't knock anybody for pursuing their dream, because obviously Draconi has a dream to be an aspiring race car driver. But you know what? So do I. But you don't see my ass in a race car right now. Anyway. Moving on. Frustration. We had a very exciting race one for the Indy Lights Series. And, you know, this brand new Dallara IL-15's brought out a whole new element to the season. It's brought a whole new element to the series. And things have just picked up tenfold. And honestly, Indy Lights is one of the funnest series to watch. I mean, you've got Carlin over here that came to America from Europe, did decent, actually not decent, damn good at the European levels and the junior levels of Formula. You know, I believe it was 3.5 and so on and so forth. Phenomenal over in Europe. They come over here, they get with the program with the Dallara IL-15. They go out and races 1 through 3, Ed Jones kicks everybody's ass. And you got Spencer Pigot finishing 3rd and 2nd. You got Jack Harvey who's on it. You got a slew of talent that came up from USF 2000 and Pro Mazda that ultimately said, hey, we want in with the Dallara IL-15 because this is a clean slate for everybody. We want this car. And I could not be happier with the way that the season has started with them. I can't be happier with the way that everything has began to build for Anderson Promotions with this Dallara IL-15 and Indy Lights. The talent level is there, and today it was on display because we saw Spencer Pigot, who ended up winning the Pro Mazda Championship last year, moved up with Juncos. Juncos decided to put 2 entries in Indy Lights this year. This kid had been so close and on it. Grabbed the pole for this race. He ended up winning. At one point, he was winning the race by over 7 seconds. Ended up finally winning. I believe the margin of victory was 6.7. Led every lap of the Indy Lights 100 today at Barber Motorsports Park. I could not be more thrilled. He was the first guest that we had here on the show for, not in the gravel trap, but the other show that we have going on, Climbing the Grid, the Road to Indy, where we just premiere the junior levels and the up-and-coming talents. And I've been saying it for over a year now that Spencer Pigot's the real deal. And it would be exciting if Juncos could continue to financially be stable enough to continue to progress up the ladder and go from maybe Indy Lights and put him in an IndyCar seat. Because I believe that Juncos is doing things the right way. And it reminds me a lot of when Schmidt Peterson was coming up through. And I mean, ultimately, they ended up kind of getting lucky by getting in the Indy 500 with Tagliani, and it really foot the bill for their stability and starting to break into the sport on a premier level with IndyCar. But, man, there's so many fun teams. And Carlin's looking to move up to the Indy level. It's incredibly exciting, and I couldn't be happier to see Indy Lights and Anderson Promotions continue to do well and start to really thrive. But today, besides Spencer Pigot winning, you had Jack Harvey running second, and R.C. Anderson picking up the third place to complete the podium. And the winner of the first 3 races, Ed Jones, ended up finishing 4th. So the championship battle there has tightened up. I believe now Ed Jones only has a 12-point lead, if my memory serves me correctly. I'm not looking at the points right in front of me. But really excited to see this championship start to take hold, because I think that Jack Harvey and Spencer Pigot are going to be there till the end. I think Ed Jones is proving this worth. I didn't really know what to think of him at first because I didn't know much about him. Obviously, Max Chilton being an F1 driver, former F1 driver, you figure he's going to be in the mix. So I'm really excited. And, you know, tomorrow they've got race 2 going on for Indy Lights, and we'll see if Pigot can get the clean sweep. So There's a lot kind of going on there, Josh. What do you make of? I know that the Indy Lights isn't your forte or the junior levels per se, but just a little bit that you've gotten a chance to see and the way that this season has kind of progressed and the way that everything has gone. What do you think of how Indy Lights and even the junior levels are being handled by Anderson?
I think it's being handled phenomenally. I mean, Anderson's a smart guy, and you know, I mean, we were talking about during the off season of how Indy Lights was getting entries, you know, and the entry list kept on growing, and it's like, you know, Indy Lights was making IndyCar look bad, and Anderson isn't hamstrung by IndyCar either. I mean, I think a small case in point, this is just one, is that how he's ending the season two weeks or 1 week after the IndyCar season. He's ending the season at Laguna Seca, which, I mean, we can only hope, which is kind of what we have in IndyCar, we can only hope that maybe that's going to open up the door for IndyCar to return to Laguna Seca. I know you would absolutely love that, but I mean the new Indy Lights car, I think, has become a complete game changer, and I know a lot of the current IndyCar drivers, you know, gave it some high favor, and you know, after seeing the car at Long Beach and St. Petersburg, you know, it sounds good, it's fast, it looks good. You know, so and then you know, with it attracting guys like Carlin over, and then even though Max Chilton didn't really make a name for himself, or I don't want to say he didn't make a name for himself in F1, he just didn't set the world on fire, but you know, attracting guys like that to come over, you know it's all boding very, very well.
I couldn't agree more. I think the future is bright, and I love the fact that they're not going to allow IndyCar schedule to handicap it. I love that they end the season at Laguna Seca. Laguna Seca is without a doubt my favorite road course, maybe even in the world. So I know the facilities are in need of being a little bit more updated in various areas. And this Dallara, or not Dallara, still Dallara. The IndyCar, the Dallara IndyCar, is a lot wider. The DW12, even with all its nice little gadgets and widgets and flicks and whatever else, winglets, it's a lot wider than the Indy cars used to be and the Champ cars used to be. So, you know, we'll see. Trying to get cars to run side by side through the corkscrew has never actually happened, in my opinion. I don't really see a big difference, but a lot of people make that argument. So I guess I feel the need to speak on their behalf because I usually get slammed with it. But just briefly, I want to touch on, Aaron Talese won the USF 2000 race yesterday, and we're in tan from Andretti Autosport, took the Pro Mazda race today. Those two events happened just before the Indy Lights race and qualifying at Barber Motorsports Park this afternoon. So a lot going on there. Championships getting a little tighter on both those because neither of those drivers had won this year either. So it's fun to see all the championship battles really tighten up, and we'll see if IndyCar can be much of the same tomorrow. Josh, there was a very interesting thing that I decided to do, and it's for the folks out there listening. They can go to TributeRacing.com and track it down towards the bottom of the page. But, you know, boxing has this thing called pound for pound. And essentially what pound for pound is in boxing is you've got a bunch of different boxers and different weight classes, and they try to weigh out who would be the best of the best if they were all to fight each other. Like, who pound for pound is the best? Like, who does the best in their weight class? Who does the best overall, et cetera, et cetera? And, you know, in boxing, Floyd Mayweather's up there. Manny Pacquiao, they're up there. He's up there. They fight next week, so I'll be tuning into that one. But free promo, there you go. But we decided to incorporate the same thing in racing, putting, instead of a middleweight and a light heavyweight and a flyweight against each other, we decided to touch on what if you could use the weight classes as racing series. So F1 versus NASCAR versus IndyCar versus World Rally versus MotoGP, any racing series imaginable in the world. And we broke it down to a top 15 list. And we called it the Tribute Racing Pound for Pound World Rankings. And I ended up writing this up the other day, putting it up. It's the April edition. We're going to release them each month. And essentially, it's the top 15 drivers in the world, pound for pound, at the time. And then you've got five that missed the cut. Now, Josh.
Yes.
I'm going to start at the top. Actually, you know what? I'm not going to start at the top. That would be too easy. I'll start at who missed the cut for this list. And I know some of it is different than what a lot of people may be used to or stuff that we have traditionally not talked about on the show, but nonetheless, these drivers or riders deserve to be recognized. So just trying to get this wrapped up here. Who missed the cut for the top 15 on the world rankings for the inaugural pound for pound of 2015? You had Tony Kanaan for IndyCar, Jimmy Johnson for NASCAR Sprint Cup, Jamie Wincup, who's phenomenal in V8 Supercars, Ryan Dungey, dude's won like 7 races in AMA Supercross this year, and you got Valtteri Bottas in F1, who missed the opening race of the season, but believe it or not, sits 5th in points and only trails his teammate, Felipe Massa, who's ran every race by only 1 point. So, do you have any issue with any of the people that missed the cut at the moment, before knowing anything on the list? Actually, you're probably looking at the list right now that I think about it.
Yeah, I'm taking a look at it right now. I mean, I wouldn't disagree with you at all. I mean, other than I would say that Kanaan was probably Kanaan would make the cut for me just because, you know, I mean, carrying over from last season, you know, I'm not sure if you use this to determine your ranking, but Kanaan has improved a great deal on the road courses in this last year. You know, and then starting this season, you know, Kanaan has been quick everywhere. You know, he made the fast 6 today. So I would go ahead and include Kanaan, but other than that, I have no disagreement.
I definitely touch on a little bit of last year, because that's how I kind of tried to debate, because, you know, we haven't run every race, or every series hasn't run the same amount of races this year. You've got AMA Supercross, whose season's damn near over. NASCAR's already run like 9 races, and F1's only run like 4. So, big difference. But for the listeners out there, if you're not looking at the list, we'll give you the rundown, and we'll start from the bottom and work the way up. And if you've got any disagreement with this, we'd love to get your feedback. You can call in at 347-838-9215, or even tweet us at Tribute Racing, as well as Josh. What's your Twitter handle?
JFarmer7710.
There you go. So you can hit us up on either one of those, or call us. Again, that number is 347-838-9215. So starting in at number 15, we got Elio Castroneves. 14th is Kimi Raikkonen. 13th is a surprise, but it's Martin Truex Jr. You might ask why he's on this list at all, because he hasn't even won a race. The reason being is because he races for Furniture Row Racing. And he's got a bunch of 6ths and a bunch of 8ths and a bunch of 9ths. He had a string of 8 consecutive top 10 finishes. And let's be honest, he's not in a Hendrick equipment car. He's not at Penske. He's at Furniture Row Racing. So he's doing the most with the least. And, you know, that's exactly what Pound for Pound is all about. It's about looking at the equipment, the consistency, the wins. And right now, Martin Truex Jr. is the absolute epitome of everything that this series embodies. So Nico Rosberg heads up the 12th spot. Marc Marquez out of MotoGP is an 11th. And then starting in at 10th is Andrea Dovizioso, who's got 3 consecutive second-place finishes in MotoGP. Joey Logano's 9th. Jonathan Rea from World Superbike is 8th. The guy's won 6 out of 8 races so far this year. Will Power is 7th. He would be higher if not for that 20th-place finish at Long Beach last week, I'll tell you that. Valentino Rossi is 6th. Sebastian Vettel is 5th. Juan Pablo Montoya from Bacara, Colombia, is 4th. Kevin Harvick is 3rd. Sebastian Ogier is 2nd. And then Lewis Hamilton, I can't do the David Hobb voice, ends up taking up the top spot. Best team, currently the best driver, lighting the world on fire. 3 out of 4 race wins. I don't like it, but unfortunately that's just the way it is. That being said, Josh, you want to know why Jimmy Johnson isn't on the list?
Yeah. Despite of his slow start, I mean, you got to think Jimmy's probably one of the best guys in a cup to ever race in a cup car. I mean, he's smooth. He listens to Chad Knaus. Chackenhouse is brilliant. You know, love him or hate him. But yeah, care to elaborate why he's not on the list?
Well, he does have two wins this year, and I strongly considered it, but there is a very real fact of inconsistency. And for him to be in Hendrick equipment, which currently is, next to Team Penske, the best equipment you can be in on the cup level, you know, he may have the two wins, but the consistency isn't there. And like I said, he just barely missed the cut. I mean, this guy would have probably been 16th on the list or 17th. He's right there with Kanaan as far as, I mean, Kanaan's sitting third in points right now, I believe. And, you know, he has a win at Auto Club Speedway, the season finale for IndyCar last year, and he's done solid this year. But when you look at it coming from last year to this year, you're going up against Elio, you're going up against Will Power, and, you know, Juan Montoya, who have been phenomenal in their own right. As far as the cup level, I mean, you got to look at everything that's got. Maybe if there was a guy on this list that you would replace Jimmy Johnson with, who would you do it with?
If I could replace Jimmy Johnson with someone on currently on the list.
If you could take somebody out of the top 15 and bump Jimmy Johnson up, who do you think is undeserving of being in the top 15? Only one driver that I actually literally thought of taking off this list, because I honestly didn't see the consistency over a long period of time. But it's really starting to hit its stride, and that's who I would have taken off, is this driver.
Yeah, well, I mean, since I don't follow MotoGP, it's kind of hard for me to judge. But, you know, after you said what you said, I do... You know, I do think that, you know, Jimmy probably would probably be a 16th, and just, you know, just barely missing the cut by the skin of his teeth, I would say.
Yeah, I didn't know whether or not Kimi Raikkonen deserved to be on the list. I mean, he's got two fours. He had a phenomenal drive in Bahrain. That's the guy I was actually tempted to swap out for Jimmy Johnson on this list. That was the only thing.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking of that too.
I mean, money, bang for the buck, Martin Truex Jr. has just been absolutely phenomenal, in my opinion, this year. I mean, I know Kevin Harvick has lit the world on fire with a bunch of first and second place finishes and a streak that's just unparalleled, unless you're Richard Petty. I just, you know, but outside of that, to me, Martin Truex Jr. has been absolutely on it. That being said, We're running out of things. Oh, we got somebody on here. Hold on one second. You're on the air, caller.
Do you guys really think I wasn't going to call from the racetrack this weekend?
No. We honestly thought you were going to be too busy with the free ice cream at the track.
Well, Bluebell's having a bit of a recall right now, so they're not going to be at the track, remember?
Oh, hey, yeah. So you're screwed.
Hey,
yeah, I know, right?
Hey. Chris, hold on a second. We got another caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's going on?
Hey, man, what's up? It's Frank. How you guys doing?
Hey,
oh,
Frank.
Good. I can't stay on with you long because we're sitting here under a tornado watch. My kids are scared to death. I just wanted to chime in on the pound-for-pound rankings. Well,
all right. Go for it.
All right, fair enough. I just want to give you the big thumbs up on Truex. I've been watching him this year, too. Again, like you said, the kid is doing more with less, but I think the glaring omission, and, you know, Joey, you and I talked about it the other day, Scott Dixon. I mean, this, even if you loop to last year, Dixon was strong at the end of the year last year. He had a couple of poor performances in the first two races, but here's a guy who vaulted from essentially 15th up to 4th in the standings. At NOLA, he was fastest in the practice. He got the shaft when the qualifying was rained out. Then he got the shaft when there was no green laps to speak of at the race. But I think if we'd have had that race in better conditions, Dixon would have been right there at the front. So, and again, strong again today in qualifying and practice. So I think that's the big glaring omission. You know, Jimmy Johnson aside, all Jimmy Johnson fans can say, boo-hoo, but I think Scott Dixon deserves to be on your list. So I think after this weekend, I believe he'll make your list.
Let me ask you this.
Cents.
Let me ask you this, Frank. If you had to pick between Elio Castroneves, who's got a 4th, 4th, and a 2nd. I'm sorry, not a 4th, 4th, and a 2nd. I'm thinking of Kimi. Elio Castroneves, actually, I think Elio also has a 4th and 2 consecutive runner-up finishes. I'm sorry, man, getting confused. If you had a 4th and 2 runner-ups compared to a 15th and 11th and then a win, who do you give the nod to? Does a win hold that much weight?
Win holds quite a bit of weight. At the same time, I can't disagree that Castroneves belongs on your list. The guy has been absolutely resurgent. I would have thought he'd have been the weak link on that team they have this year, but he has really stepped his game up. I mean, he was his qualifying lap at Long Beach was incredible, and he was again very good today at Barber. I mean, it's hard to plead a case against Elio. So that's a tough call, but again, I think a win means a lot. And if you just look at the circumstances of Barber and what could have happened, and I know we can't put any stock or any money on what it could have, should have, I think Dixon got robbed a little bit that weekend.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that one. Chris, how about you? You got any thoughts on this?
Honestly, I haven't heard anything prior to my call up here. Did you guys go over anything about on-track action at Barber today besides IndyCar
yep.
qualifying?
Yeah, we've already touched on all that. We were just kind of going over this pound for pound, seeing who agreed and who disagreed, trying to stir up the pot a little bit. You know me.
Well, I disagree with everything everybody else says. You know that. But that being said, did y'all talk about the controversy at the end of the Pirelli World Challenge GT race today?
Nope, we haven't touched on the Pirelli World Challenge yet, so if you want to go ahead and lead it.
Well, let's have some fun today. So, the Pirelli World Challenge had the GTC race this morning, the first of two. They had the second one, they're going to have the second one tomorrow. And what happened was one car had spun in the last minute and a half of the race, and they went full course yellow with about a minute and change left to go in the race. With 50 seconds to go, race control makes a decision that they're going to go full course. No, they're going to go back to green for a one-lap shootout, despite the fact that time expired or would expire when they were going around under caution. So they basically said, okay, we're going to go green, we're going to commit to this decision. They went green, and Olivier Beretta said that the Bentley jumped the start. He went nowhere on the race on the start there, and Michael Lewis's tire, his left rear tire disintegrated completely. So he lost a lot of spots and actually ended up DNFing, where he would have finished in the top five, I think, had the race just ended under yellow right there. So Ryan DL said the race was a cluster right there, or that last little restart there, especially given what happened with Long Beach, and he wasn't really too pleased.
Man,
yeah,
that was
a big controversy.
Sounds like IndyCar clustered right there. Maybe they got some race control people over there running over Pirelli.
Well, they had so many penalties after Long Beach. They had like 20-something penalties. And in fact, DL actually had a 20-point penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct for walking off the podium before the champagne spray was to take place. He did all the hat, the pictures, the trophy pictures, everything. He just walked off before the champagne was to be sprayed, and they penalized him for that. And he's going to end up appealing that penalty, which I'm hoping that, you know, he does. Because, honestly, he's just going to do what?
I saw Andy Lally doing that a few years ago at the Grand Am race at COTA. So, I'm sorry, but, I mean, I've been a competitor, so I know how it goes. If you lose, I mean, call that person a sore loser, call them whatever you want, or a poor sportsman. But at the end of the day, you know, if all you want to do is win and you hate losing as badly as I hate losing, I'm the type of guy that you probably don't want to talk to after I finish second.
Joey, it wasn't because he came in second or third or wherever DL finished. It was because of the low driving standards that they had that day at Long Beach. I mean, everybody was driving like Cole Trickle before he learned how to race in Days of Thunder. You know, I mean, they were hitting everybody was hitting each other left and right and center. He was really protesting the poor driving standards that the series had at the time. I mean, if you look at the penalty sheet after Long Beach, it's basically a who's who of drivers in the series. with people being penalized points left and right, and, you know, $1,000, $5,000 here and there, everywhere, really.
Real quick, while we got you on the air, because I know you're out there and you're covering the IndyCar race this weekend from Barber, what do you make, you know, I want to go back to this just briefly because you weren't on the air with us earlier. What do you make of IndyCar and Dale Coyne and Francesco Dracone and this whole mess that is him being so far off the pace? I mean, he's over 1.8 seconds behind the next to slowest guy.
At least he isn't as bad as Milka Duno was in 2010 when she was so slow that several of the Indy Lights cars were faster than she was. I mean, I have a friend of mine that was in the press, the media center at Edmonton, when they IndyCar announced that she was officially on probation, and there was a very hearty chuckle in the media center at that race. That being said, there has been worse in IndyCar before. I mean, look at the Dale Coyne Racing who's who drivers, and you'll see guys with the name of, like, you know, Fulvio Bellavio, and Arne Meyer, and, you know, guys like that. Do what?
Chris, at what point does this become, I mean, the way you just phrased it is exactly how I was hoping you would phrase it. At what point does it change? You know, your exact words were, well, at least he's not as slow as, at least this. At what point do we change the mindset of IndyCar and say that we're going to put the best damn drivers we can find in these cars? At what point do we get away from this, well, at least they're not as bad as this person, or, you know, they're still bad. The fact
it's when the drivers are starting to get hired on merit instead of on their on how big their wallets are. Frankly, I wish we had a situation where the teams were able to hire people that would spend all their effort and energy into getting sponsors for the team. You know, when we had teams like Shearson Racing with, you know, Doug Shearson owning the team and Domino's Pizza sponsoring them, and then having, you know, Howdy Holmes and Danny Sullivan and Alonzo Jr. and Robert, Raul Boisel, and then Ari Leyendijk. You know, the only driver, I mean, hell, they won with Sullivan, they won with Al Jr., they nearly won with Boisel, and they ended up winning the 500 with Leyendijk. So, the problem is that finding sponsorship is incredibly difficult. Hell, look at what happened in USF 2000 this weekend. Aunt Jordan Lloyd, we're walking through some very big mud right here, but Jordan Lloyd for John Comiskey Racing, he had to head back to Australia. I'm getting into some mud right here, y'all. It did rain a lot out here, but I'm walking through the parking lot right now. Jordan Lloyd, he had to go back home to Australia to get some more money to race in USF 2000. And Anthony Martin, in his sister car, finished second just now in the race earlier today, thanks to a fantastic last lap pass on Jake Edson. So it all boils down to the first question in racing. Speed costs money. How fast do you want to go? And I wish we were at a point where the teams would hire people that would get them sponsors full time. But it looks like they have a decision filled already, and they're called race drivers now. And I hate it. I really, really do. And of course, it also doesn't help that they don't have tobacco money as well, helping them out. You know, because we had Hollywood, we had, with the Brazilian cigarettes, we had Marlboro. We also had a lot of the beer companies too.
Now we have energy drinks. I mean, you got Monster, Red Bull, Rockstar.
That's the new tobacco.
I mean,
tobacco money.
It'd be nice to see more of that stuff integrated. I don't disagree at all with that. It is what it is. It's the unfortunate viciousness of the business of the sport. But that said, tomorrow we've got a very fun, what's supposed to be a very dry race at Barber. That being said, for this IndyCar race tomorrow, Elio's on pole. Power second. Who do you like tomorrow?
It's either going to be Elio or Power. I know I didn't pick either one of them for my picks for Matt Nix's radio show because you can't pick the same guy more than once for that show. But it's going to be one of those two, in my opinion. have Team Penske cars been on the front row every time they raced at Barber. Elio's had his second pole. Power, he's been on the front row a bunch of times at Barber. I think almost every single time except for maybe once. It's going to be a ding-dong battle between the two of them. Trying to pick one out of the two, you might as well just give me a hat with those two names in it, and I'll draw one out.
Hold on one second.
That's how close it's going to be, in my opinion.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, it's Brian Carocio here. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Brian. How are you, Brian?
Good. Hey, I called in about Mesa. I was listening. Real quick, the issue with guys like Dracone, I mean, it's basically ride buyers. In other words, not hired on merit. A check. The issue is that the current system in rewards the
Brian, you're breaking up pretty bad there.
And I will only say one thing before we get Brian back. A lot of very, very, very famous drivers started out as ride buyers. Michael Schumacher, Niki Lauda. I mean, heck, Niki Lauda got several different loans, and it wasn't until he became world champion that he was able to pay them all back. So, I mean, some of them are good, but some of them are just simply like John D. Delatraz, who basically was there because of his money. As the famous F1 commentator once said, can't remember his name, I think it was Ben Edwards, who knows.
I want to apologize real quick. We lost Brian Carocio there from AR1, but hopefully we'll get him back. We've got just a few minutes left here. Josh, we heard Chris's pick. He's taking Power. He's taking Elio. Who do you like tomorrow? You've been kind of quiet over there.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for passing the mic back to me. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I think Elio is probably a sure bet for the win. I think Elio, last year finishing second in Indy, finishing second in the championship, even though he didn't really elaborate on it too much when I talked to him at St. Petersburg, I think he's got an even bigger burning desire this year to win. And I think, as long as he leads the field in turn one, Barber's had a tendency, as long as it's dry, to produce a long green flag run. So I think Elio's got it made.
Brian, we got you back. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, you guys still talking about the Dracone thing? I guess I'll just elaborate for you guys real quick. I hope I sound better, first off. Do I sound better?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I moved to a different part of the house. But, yeah, the system as currently is rewards hiring people who bring a check because there's so little prize money and because there's so much leader circle money. A guy like Dracone can get you the $1.25 million, and if you compare to say a Sebastian Bourdais, who everybody agrees is a really good driver who doesn't bring any money, Sebastian Bourdais can go out and maybe earn you $100,000 in prize money. And so if Dracone brings $4 million and Bourdais brings zero, then you take away Bourdais, $100,000, the difference is $3.9 million when you hire a guy like Dracone over hiring someone who everybody would agree is a really good driver, Bourdais. And that is such a flawed system when you really just look at the pure numbers. And until they get away from that and until they have a system that aligns the interests of the owners with the commercial interest of growing the sport, I think that you're going to continue to see this. And, I mean, we can hammer on it and say, bring the best drivers, hire the best people, blah, 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 blah. But the reality is nothing's going to change until IndyCar really actually addresses the problem and, sets up an economic system that places a greater premium on talent. And I just, it's sad because I do think that it hurts the sport. I do think that having a guy out there who's 3 seconds off the pace and in everybody's way, and, we all take it out on him, but again, I think that this is a management issue. This is not a Francesco Dracone. It's not Dale Coyne's fault. It's not their fault. It's a system that is fundamentally flawed.
Yeah, so. I mean, as many of the current problems in IndyCar right now, it's all symptomatic of of series management. I mean, we've hammered on this multiple times before. We could go on for hours. And yeah, I mean, I agree. The system needs to be fixed some way or another. I mean, whether it be, you know, taking money out of the purse for the Indy 500 and bringing it back to some of the other races, or just digging into the family war chest. I don't know. Just do something.
Yeah, something has to be done. I this isn't good, but you can't blame Dale. You can't blame Dracone. It's the reality of the system, but it's something that really has to be looked at. And if I'm IndyCar, I'm looking at this and saying, how do I align the interests of the owners with the commercial interests of the series and get the owners to hire people that are going to help the series grow? Because you're not going to grow your fan base at all with, you know, Francesco Dracone and Rodolfo Gonzalez, so on and so forth. They're just there filling the field, you know, in a seat. Just they're field fillers. So, anyway.
Well, Brian, I haven't had a chance to touch on it yet, but you've had a chance to probably look at qualifying by now, and we've seen what this aero kit's done, these new aero kits for Chevy and Honda. And things have been a little bit topsy-turvy this year, but leading into tomorrow, who do you like for the race?
I hate to be boring here, but I think it's probably just going to be a duel between Power and Castro Neves. I thought what Josh was saying earlier about Castro Neves is he kind of has his head down. I was talking with our reporter who's on site earlier, and she told me that Power is really, kind of determined this weekend. I see, and then Pagano behind them is, I think, a little off the pace. He admitted as much in the press conference. So if it stays sort of a straight speed race, I think it's going to come down to a battle between Power and Castro Neves. I think the wild card is if you have sort of a strategy race where it becomes sort of an endeavor in managing tires, and if the caution falls right where it becomes a fuel race, then I think it possibly falls to a Dixon. But if it's sort of a straight speed battle, I think it's going to be we're going to see a battle between Power and Castro Neves tomorrow. And I think Will is a little desperate right now in that he sees how good his teammates are, and he doesn't sort of have the rule of the roost at Team Penske anymore. So I think he's going to be a real eager beaver to take the fight to Castro Neves tomorrow. And that's, I don't know, he might see a little fisticuffs there. I think it's going to be. So that would be my analysis.
I think a desperate Will has a tendency to do crazy things. And the one thing I've waited for is these strong personalities at Penske to start rivaling each other and stepping over the line, so to speak. So maybe this is the weekend that we see the beginning of that, with Power being
Yeah, that would be really good for things. I'm not saying, that they should be at each other's throat, but, a little bit of conflict. It's been a little lovey-dovey so far this year. It's so great with four people and blah, blah. And I think, maybe a little bit of conflict and a little bit of sort of who's going to emerge from that foursome. And also with Montoya having such a tough qualifying, the other three are going to be chomping at the bit to kind of emerge from the group.
Absolutely. The race at Long Beach last week only had one caution. I don't think there's any way in hell we only have one caution for this race. I expect more contact. It's a very fast track. I expect a lot of passing. And with that being said, I'm going to go against the grain here and not go with anybody from Penske. And if I were to pick, I'd probably go with maybe even Montoya. I wouldn't pick any of the three that are starting 1 through 3. I think when I look at the tires and what's left, as well as the pace and the fact that I'm kind of expecting more cautions to fall where they are, if a guy in the top five is going to win this race or have a hell of a run, I think you're looking at maybe first-time winner in Joseph Newgarden. Just a feel. That's total vibe on my side. But outside of him, I think because we're going to have a lot of passing, I think you could see a guy like Graham's been pretty quick, but he hasn't been epic. He hasn't been great, but I look at a guy like Montoya in the back. I look at maybe Ryan Hunter-Reay, who took this race last year. But ultimately, I think we have a good chance at having the potential first-time winner in Joseph Newgarden tomorrow.
Yeah, that would be great. And you know, if you know, I'm not trying to cheerlead for anybody, but if there's anybody who deserves it and such, it would definitely be Joseph. You know, he's had some rotten luck. I just don't think he has, at least for this weekend and at least for now, I just don't think he has the pure pace of the four that are starting ahead of him. And I think at this point in the season and at this point in the team's development of the aero kits, I still think there's just a defined gap between the Penske and Ganassi cars and everyone else. Those other teams just don't have the pace yet. I think they will get it in time. But I think for a little while now, we're going to see Penske and Ganassi kind of have just that bit of a gap over everybody else. And Newgarden even admitted as much in the post-quali presser, where he said, you know, in the dry, I didn't have it. He said, I was even hoping that it would rain, you know, and during the Firestone Fast 6.
I tell you, the guy that's just kind of hanging around, and he hangs around in quite a few races, and whatnot, is Tony Kanaan. And here he is again, hanging around in sixth. Bourdais also hanging around. He's sitting in seventh. I mean, these guys just...
Yeah.
And if you continue to hang around at the front, things could eventually fall your way. I think there's good potential for those two guys.
Yeah. Kanaan, I think, is in a good place mentally. You know, the first half of last year, I think he was adjusting to a new team. And I think, you know, 3 years at KV... You know, KV's good and such, but it just, you know, I think, you know, after a while that became a lot for Kanaan to sort of, that was a lot of pressure. You know, he basically had to carry the team. And I think from about midway last year on, he's been in a really good spot kind of mentally. And he's, you know, anytime you see him at the track, he's cheerful and he seems, you know, like he's in a good spot. And, you know, he's regularly with Dixon. It's not as though Dixon probably has a small edge, but it's not as if Dixon is regularly beating Kanaan. I think that it could fall to him tomorrow, depending on things. But Power Caster is the clear, you know, favorites. You know, I would even give people the field if I could have Power and Caster in that. If I was a betting man, I'd give you the field.
Fair enough. Well,
yeah,
we've got just a handful of minutes here on the show. And right before we close off, Brian, we'll start with you and we'll kind of go around just briefly. I know you got a chance to call in late and definitely appreciate it because it's been great insight. Give us your final thoughts.
Thanks for having me.
No, it's a blast, man. You're always welcome.
Oh, thank you.
But give us your final thoughts for before we close out the show.
I guess, or IndyCar, just in general. With IndyCar, you know, kind of some of the things I said earlier, I really think that you're going to see, and some fans may not like hearing this, but I think you're genuinely going to see that Penske-Ganassi dominance for a little bit while longer. I do think Honda at some point is going to close the gap, and while everybody's sort of saying, oh, you know, Honda's going to leave and this and that, that's a very, very sort of proud company, and they're not going to kind of sort of take this line down. Whatever they can do, they're going to do. And I also think the other thing that's going to happen is, you know, I got the sense last week at Long Beach talking to a few people, Honda is ready to go on the Speedway kits. In other words, they have sort of thrown a little bit more at that side of things. And I think what we're going to see is a very competitive month of May with the Speedway kits. So that's something I'm kind of looking forward to. I think on the road courses and street courses, for the foreseeable future, Chevy's going to have the edge.
Chris, how about you?
So, anyway.
Chris, you on the air with us?
Oh, me?
Yeah,
Yeah, I know. I had it on mute there for a little bit. So my final thought, we saw some great action today on track with USF 2000, and also Pro Mazda, Weyron 10 getting his first win of the season, and Special Pickett getting his first win for the season with Indy Lights, finally ending a Carlin run with Ed Jones. But I want to give a good tip of the hat to a good buddy of mine that I've been keeping tabs on, Nate Stacey, who actually drove his first GTS race yesterday and the second one this weekend. I mean, today. He actually finished P12 in the GTS race today, driving in a car that had more horsepower than all the other cars he's ever raced combined. He was driving a Boss 302 Mustang and did pretty well for himself out there. I'm looking forward to a good race tomorrow. I'm looking forward to the month of May, finally getting that month back up. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how the next few weeks treat all of us. Can't wait to get back to Indy.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and jump in with my final thought. Well, I want to give a shout-out, actually, to Sean Rahal, who made his Indy Lights debut today with 8-Star Motorsports. And I believe he set the fastest lap of the race. I mean, Sean, you know, I'd say he's kind of one of the gems in the paddock. I mean, last year in the Tudor Championships Prototype Challenge class, I mean, he, you know, at the very end of the year, he got really strong. He won at VIR. He won at COTA, and you know, he should have won Petit, or he would have won Petit had he not crashed. So, I want to give a shout out to him. You know, now he's finally getting a shot in single seaters, and you know, good to see 8-Star getting back on track after having stayed at Long Beach.
And then there was two, Frank.
Well, I just, my final thought popped into my head as I'm sitting here under thunderstorm warnings and rain. I know all the NASCAR fans are sitting in the rain in Richmond with no race to watch today. And it disappoints me because I always like it when the IndyCar Series races at a beautiful place like Barber, at a great event, when we don't have to compete against a NASCAR race, because the NASCAR race should have been tonight. But instead, we're going to go head-to-head against it, at least the first half of the IndyCar race will be taken over by the NASCAR race if they get it on time. So, but I would just encourage any of our listeners to just turn away from that Richmond race there. you know, it's going to be won by a Penske car, I'll tell you that now. And tune into the IndyCar race, which may also be won by a Penske car. But, for me, that's just I was kind of just crushed to hear the news that they canceled NASCAR race. You're going to put it up against IndyCar tomorrow. So, because we struggle so hard to build that audience, and when we have those opportunities to race and we're not head-to-head against NASCAR, you've got fans who love auto racing who've already watched the race Saturday night with free time on their hands Sunday, where they sometimes tune into an IndyCar race and get a look at it. So, but I'm anticipating a fantastic race at Barber tomorrow. I love the place. I love the facility. George Barber's done a great job with that. And, that's my final thought.
I'll echo Frank's thought on the NASCAR front. I actually kind of hope it rains in Richmond all day tomorrow, so that way the race is on Monday. But, hell, if that happens, our buddy Matt Weaver might pull an overnighter to get up there. But all things considered...
He'll do it.
All things considered, I think the nightmare season for IndyCar continues with tomorrow of NASCAR pretty much taking up the TV spot in comparison to the first race of the year that didn't get run, along with, sorry Chris, but the NOLA wash that was the monsoon that never should have happened down there. And, and now Long Beach was, Frank loved it, I hated it. I thought more debris cautions would have been nice to at least spice more of the racing up. The only eventful part of that was the very end with Juan blocking Simon Pagenaud in a train of six. But, and here we go again with NASCAR covering up IndyCar's coverage. It's a shame because this weekend there is no F1. There is no big-time sports venue rivaling it. I mean, hockey isn't really bothering that time slot, so to speak. Most of the playoff spots have already been decided. So Sunday was, for all intents and purposes, a wide-open day. And I echo Frank's thoughts. It's that's kind of sad to see. But Anyway, we hope you enjoyed this installment of In the Gravel Trap. This is the 25th episode of what has been absolutely fun to do with you guys. We've got Josh Farmer. We got Frank Santoroski of Drafting the Circuits, Brian Carocio of AR1, Krista Hardy, Motorsport.com. I am Joey Barnes of Tribute Racing. I want to thank you all for listening in on this edition of In the Gravel Trap. Burn strong, Forza Jules. Keep fighting, Michael. Thank you all, and have a great night.